to go into their hip pocket or their handbag or whatever and say, you know, it should be this. Anyways, so he was very, very generous, was, and continued to be right through his life. Truly a remarkably generous person. One would be hard pressed to find anyone, at least anyone sane, who would have, as they say in Ireland, a bad word to say about James. He was a truly remarkable, almost saintly person. He was a very good man. And he helped me, and your first speaker last year, I don't know if you were here for that, Maeve Baghoogian, and myself were at Queen's University at the same time. And after a number of these, the next generation, a generation of poetry terms lasts about 10 years, 5 years. We have the great privilege of actually being taught by Shakespeare. We studied literature with him formally in the university. We were taught, he was teaching people like Robert Frost, Edward Thomas, Faulkner. E.M. Foster, Howard's End, texts like that. So that was a great privilege to have such a great writer, who, like many great writers, is coincidentally a great reader. The two things go hand in glove. One must be a great reader to be a great writer. It goes without saying. Well, in fact, one can never be too good as a reader. So, we also, of course, work with him informally outside the classroom, because a number of us were members of what was called, not so much at the time, but in more recent times, became known as the Belfast Group, which was a collection of writers who got together once a month and discussed each other's work. And actually, rather splendidly, forthright about one another's work. You know, there was no hesitation. I know one or two of you spent time downtown again in Belfast, but it's a society where people do not. It's an odd place because on one hand, people mince their words and talk out of both sides of their mouth, as they say. You know, some of the politicians are particularly adept at it. You know, they're saying, but they just say anything and hope for the best. But they're also very, very forthright. You know, so if you don't like your own, you're only in no doubt about it, which is great. That's really healthy to someone who can say that to you. However circumspect one might attempt to be as a reader, particularly as a reader of one's own work, it's more likely than not that one will think it's okay, it's fine, but it's fine. In any case, to be part of a community of writers like that is a great gift. It's a blessing. And, you know, the world, let's think for a moment about the world in which James Keane was born. And I'll stop blathering and then read a couple of his poems, because they're much better. And the world in which he was born, which was actually not far removed from the one into which I was born, was a world in which, well, Beatles had written in the weekend essay that they were required to write each weekend, had written, "Today the water came to Pomeroy." Not running water, it was plenty of better running water, but piped water, non-well water, arriving comparatively recently. My own first memory is of being stepped on by a horse. There were still many horses around. Actually, there have been even more horses around during World War II. I've had something of a comeback, actually. It was a world in which people lived in little, non-walled, thatched cabins at the ends of lanes in the middle of nowhere. And perhaps with a fire that hadn't gone out for decades, perhaps 100 years. People tried not to let the fire go out. But I'm getting at this society, it was possibly a Hungarian society, in which things have not changed for a very long time. There was no perceptible difference to peasant life in the 1950s. Jensky was born in 1939, by the way. No perceptible shift in how life was lived in the 1940s, 50s in Ireland than would have been in the 1850s, or maybe even 1750, and conceivably 1650, in many ways. So, Seamus, just to put it in the context a little bit, you know, was coming from that world in terms of his day-to-day life. Of course, he had gone to school. And he had read Beowulf at school, read Ovid, read Virgil. And that's a very telling fact, because just after the war in the UK, as many of you know, and this is often trailed out as a reason for the sudden efflorescence of writers from that part of the world, for sure, particularly Catholic writers, as he was, as you may or may not know. The 1947 Education Act, which, as I say, is often referred to, and has become a little bit of a truism to say it's one of the reasons why Catholics were able, in larger and substantial numbers, to receive a higher, a third level of education, was because of that act. They were able to get to school and to get to school, get a free education in a way that, as I said, was not saying no Catholics go to education in North Ireland, but certainly it opened up things. And people began to ask questions, they began to think about the conditions under which they lived. And they began to act upon what they realized. So, let me read a couple of poems. And just to give He would set the ring and fit the brand steam white sock. The song rolled over without breaking. And Henry, with a single pluck of reins, the sweating team turned round and back into the land. His eye narrowed and angled at the ground, mapping the furrow exactly. I stumbled in his hobnailed wake, fell sometimes from the polished saw. Sometimes he rolled me on his back, dipping and rising. I wanted to grow up and fly, to close one eye, stiffen my arm. All I ever did was follow in his broad shadow round the farm. I was a nuisance, tripping, falling, yapping always. But today, it is my father who keeps stumbling behind me and will not go away. So it's out of that milieu that he begins to write. In terms of the literary milieu, one major influence would be Patrick Cavanagh. Yeats, of course, was there. Yeats, he might have been interested in his prose, because, as you know, perhaps his prose criticism is really quite splendid. He writes very tellingly about Yeats as an example. The truth is, I think, that for most people engaged with poetry in Ireland, or certainly and beyond, perhaps, Yeats is such a huge presence that the way in which he's usually dealt, as it were, is to be ignored, to sort of pretend he's not there, sort of try to find a way around him, sort of sitting there in a huge terminal moraine, in the last year, and pretty much a terminal moraine. That's probably broken down a bit since then, but he was a daunting presence. Other presences that perhaps were less daunting would have been, as I say, Patrick Cavanagh. Patrick Cavanagh, who wrote in his great poem, Epic, about in Rye, a dispute between two families, the Duffys and the McCains, over a territorial line, who owns the march along these iron stones, or who owns the march in terms of terms, in terms of a robbery. So this is a key text, one of the key